Hi, this is Novad here from Parenting Next Gen. For today's episode is actually going to be a bonus episode because we are pulling something from the vault. This particular episode is from a conversation that was recorded very early on when Andre and I were just getting started. And while the audio and the visuals are not perfect because we were dealing with a technical issue, there's simply too much value in said conversation for us not to share. So we hope that you enjoyed the unfiltered peek into this conversation that was captured on one of our phones. Because listen, again, there's still a lot of value to it. So without further ado, let's get to it.
Hey, round of applause. Round of applause. Keep it going for the best parenting show.
That's right.
That you don't know about yet, but It's coming. You will know about it. You'll hear about it. You'll see us. You'll have a good time with us. Might be learning something about parenting. I don't know. I'm still learning myself. Not the best parent in the world. Mm-hmm. What do you say, Noah?
For right now, we are.
For right now. Right. Yeah. A little bit of experience.
Just a little bit.
Round of applause for the experience. Oh, man. It was great. Great to, you know, be back again. This is the Parenting Next Gen show where we are learning about parenting and how to connect better with teens and just really learn, right? And grow and become better parents.
And talk about stuff.
What kind of stuff? Tell the people.
I don't know. A whole list. The crazies. You know, because parenting is hard. It's not even like a one size fits all, and it depends on the day and depends on the kids. And once you think you have it together, you don't.
I mean, it's a forever thing, right? Because I mean, it doesn't matter how old your kids get, right? When your kids are, because I'm, and I don't even want to say my age right now, but I'm a little older, right? And you know, my mom is still my mom. You know, sometimes I might call her mommy. Other times I might say, hey, Sheila, you know, no disrespect, but, you know, call mom by her first name.
You do? And you're still alive?
Hey, listen, it's our little thing, right? Because, again, going back to what we talked about earlier, Who's your favorite child?
Oh, so you get a lot, get away with a lot.
I mean, I won't say I get away with a lot, but I will say that, you know, me and my mom, we have our thing. You know, we have our thing. We play around sometimes. And, you know, that might be me calling her by her first name sometimes. And, you know, we both laugh about it. So, you know.
Oh, but you're right, though. Like, you just never stop being a kid, no matter how old we are.
Absolutely.
It never ends. It is a lifetime job. So, we did something over the past week. Want to tell the people where we were at?
So, spent 3 days in sunny, beautiful Orlando. Great time. It was actually a trip that neither one of us knew anything about.
No,
definitely wasn't on my radar. I wasn't expecting it. But we got selected to attend a ministry conference in Orlando called D6. That stands for Deuteronomy 6. And great, great conference. It was very, very informative. A lot of breakout sessions where you know just kind of learn some things around parenting, and because it's never ending, I mean, I say it's a good thing because I mean, all the information that I can gather from different parents, I mean, only makes me a better parent.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, and we don't know everything, and sometimes that different perspective is needed, though. Definitely learn a lot, which I love because now we can talk about it and bring the resources here. But let me tell you what, before I left, you know, I'm setting everything. I got my bags packed. I'm getting ready for bed. I had to be up at 1. It was maybe 10:30 at night. My son busts the door. He's like, Mother, we didn't pray for you on this trip. I was like, what?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then the daughter comes in too. You're like, she's like, we didn't pray for you. So that, I was surprised.
Right.
I was like, okay, so.
Do your kids normally pray for you?
No.
What?
No.
Really?
I mean, if they do, it's probably in their private prayer time.
Okay.
But we do always pray when we go on road trips or whatever. So it just comes to show that the little things that are not so little, they're really paying attention. What took me aback to is their prayer. Mm. I'm like, I didn't realize.
Was it deep? Was it like, was it one of those prayers you like, oh, wait a minute. I'm
surprised. You know, close your eyes and it's just like.
One eye open type prayer. Okay.
Yes. Right. When my daughter said, "Dear Lord, may my mother continue to be anointed as she goes." When she used that term, I was like,
wow.
So, I mean, my thing with the Lord is, Lord, as I'm out here preaching your word, as I'm out here, you know, I do discipleship, I mentor people.
Right.
It's like, what if I did all of this and my kids never got that from me or never got poured into the way I pour into other people? Mm-hmm. And sometimes I worry about that, like, am I pouring in enough? But in that moment, I'm like, oh, they're paying attention.
Right.
So it meant a lot that they prayed. Towards the end, they're like, and I think I showed you one of their texts, like, mother, check in on your teens. So I'm like,
y'all. Just letting you know, we're still here. Hey.
Yeah, yeah.
That's good.
But the house, they're like, the house didn't burn down. Everything's fine. Everything was fine.
Does this put you in a more trusting situation now? Like, can you say, you know what, I can go away now and I might be okay?
Yes, but they still have people to check in. Their godparents checking in, pulling up.
Doing the village. That's what you call it, the village.
That's right.
Yeah.
So, but yes, they handled it fairly well. So we get a little bit more trust.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Listen, the only reason I ask, because I know some kids, I've worked with some kids mm-hmm. that, man, they can't stay at home by themselves right now, let alone have their parent go away on a trip. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so
what kind of mess would they get into?
My point exactly, right? Because I mean, we've all been teenagers. You know, mm-hmm. I can't say my road was perfect by any means. You know, and I had a little bit of what we like to call freedom,
mm-hmm.
a little bit.
Favorite child?
Oh man, listen. So I mean, it's good to have younger siblings because I never did it. She did it, or he did it. Never me.
You played the blame game.
Yeah, sometimes you gotta be manipulative.
Why? Why?
I mean, because like, who wants to get in trouble?
Nobody does.
Exactly. Yeah. Which leads to a great, great, great point.
What?
Physical discipline versus gentle parenting. Now, why do I ask that? I was looking at something that, you know, asked this question. And I mean, since we're kind of going down that road, like, you know, of, hey, I'm going to blame my younger sibling because I don't want to get in trouble. I think early on in the stages of you know, adolescence, a beating wasn't frowned upon.
Right.
It wasn't unheard of,
mm-hmm.
you know. I've had my fair share of beatings, just one in general that I always remember. And, you know, even if you talk to my mom, she'll tell you about it to this day.
Okay, so she doesn't deny it.
Listen, I don't deny it, you know, mm-hmm. and I just think it made me a better me because of it. But I don't even remember what I really got in trouble for, but I do remember me going into her room, her closing the door behind me, and I was running. Now, her room wasn't but so big, right? It wasn't like it was a big room at the right. time. So it fairly middle-sized room, and I'm running around the room, running over top of the bed, and she's just standing with the belt just looking at me like,
what are you doing?
As soon as you get tired enough, I'm going to get you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to get you. So, I mean, I say that to say beatings early on in our adolescent years, it wasn't unheard of. Mm-hmm. You know, your grandmother might beat you, your uncle might beat you, you know, whoever. But, you know, spankings were a thing. You know, if that was the consequence. Nowadays,
mm-hmm.
not so much,
mm-hmm.
you know. And my personal opinion, I think that's where parenting kind of took astray. You know, and I don't mean like physical discipline in the sense of, you know, I'm not going to punch my kid or anything crazy. But, you know, hey, sometimes you got to tighten them up a little bit versus, oh, well, you know, just think about what you did and, you know, you were wrong.
You've gone too far left.
You know, you got to stand in the corner for a little while. I mean, hey, listen, I'm not knocking anybody's parenting. That's not what I'm doing here. But I think there's a difference mm-hmm. in how one parents.
Absolutely. I am trying to say this very carefully, you know, because my mom, she was definitely the beater of the house.
I mean, shout out to moms.
She's only but like, mind you, this lady, she's only but like 5'2". And even that, I'm like, more like 5, but okay. I definitely got my share of beatings. They were often and frequent, to the point that when I became an adult, she apologized, because there were times where it definitely got out of hand. And it broke something in our relationship. Like, even, I'm not going to say even today we're rebuilding, but I know that it's not what it could have been.
Right.
But she did end up apologizing for, like, I'm sorry.
How far in your journey was, like, were you in your mid-20s, late-30s when an apology came, or?
Yes, we were actually at an altar call at church.
Oh, wow.
Okay. So, I couldn't talk about it. I forgave her, and we're cool, and my mom's my mom. But I did end up having to deal with the ramifications of that. And that meant that I had to overcome fear of confrontation all up in my 20s, even early 30s. But yeah, we've gotten out of that, and there's still triggers sometimes, but it's just part of that, you know, being the extreme of everything is physical discipline, which did affect how I'm raising my kids. Which I don't do gentle parenting per se, but I also don't lay hands on them either because of the things that I lived through with mom.
Gotcha. I was reading something and it said, like, and this was a comment by somebody. It was like, there's no such thing as gentle parenting. It's like permissive parenting.
That right there.
Yeah. And I was like, man, what is that? What does that really mean? Like, permissive parenting?
Well, it's, I think you just let a lot go. Like, you just, you know, we're trying to be understanding, trying to give them grace. But one of the things we actually learn at the conference is we need to start raising these kids like we're shepherds, like we're shepherding them.
Right.
So it has to come from a point, not necessarily discipline, but we are discipling them. And that was a central theme as well.
Okay.
We're correcting, but I'm redirecting you.
Right.
Like, this is not allowed. But let's talk about why it's not allowed and what is expected of you.
Right. So with the amount of what's kind of happening today in society with teenagers, and, you know, we see a lot of teenagers or teens or kids necessarily leaving before their parents do.
Leaving
like the world.
Mm-hmm. Like going out into the world?
Well, no, leaving the world altogether. Yeah. So, again, just kind of in the line of work that I do, you know, you hear about that a lot. And I've heard about, you know, teenagers not making it to 21. Like, we've heard that thing before. Like, oh, you might hear somebody say, oh, man, you know, teacher said I wouldn't make it to 21, or my parents said I wouldn't make it to 21, or whatever. And that, you know, due to behavior purposes. So as you kind of see that become a thing now, you know, in real time, it's like, you know, where do we kind of miss the boat in parenting?
Yeah. So let me ask you, so based on your experience, are you seeing more like homicide, suicide, drug abuse? Like, what are we talking about?
So, to kind of clarify what I've seen and what I've experienced, you know, there have been a few deaths, you know, not really so much drug induced situations, but, you know, I've spent time at, you know, juvenile detention centers and just kind of talking with kids. And I mean, to really be clear, my son, my 18-year-old, is currently serving time. And, you know, that's a whole different thing to kind of go through it with your child. Mm-hmm. And not only is he experiencing it, I'm experiencing it as well. But you just see more and more teens kind of go down this road, down this path of that doesn't lead anywhere but jail or death. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of difficult to navigate that, especially as a parent, you know, when dealing with that. Or hey, have my kids seen that prior? Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not speaking about myself, but you know, have your kids or have they seen this window of, man, my dad was in jail or my mom went to jail or they got in trouble or, you know, whatever the case.
It was that modeled
before them.
Yeah.
Right? So I think, you know, when looking at that, it puts you in a perspective of, because you don't want to shield your child.
Right.
You don't want to keep them inside or keep them in a bubble, but how far out do you let them roam before you say, hey?
Yeah, keep them on a short leash, yeah. Because hovering over them and protecting them and shielding them, you're not training them for the world.
Right.
But also, I'm just wondering, I think a lot of parents are tired too. Like they just don't have the fortitude.
When you say tired though, like what do you mean?
I'd rather let you roam because I'm too tired from work and the responsibilities. And even little ones like, here's your iPad. I'm just tired.
Hey, look, because I didn't see enough of them scroll. And they scroll good. I'm like, man,
they really do.
They know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. At two.
Yes.
So, but when you say tired though, right? Like, I mean, we all get tired.
Yeah.
You know, but maybe being a parent is a responsibility that, you know, I can't just give up
or no, just. Can.
I mean, some people do, and it's crazy, but I mean, parenting isn't a responsibility. You can give up, right? And I think it really kind of weighs in on, you know, something I wanted to talk about because. Two-parent household versus single-parent households. Mm-hmm. I think that plays a major part in kind of what we're talking about in, hey, how far do I let them roam? Well, if I got three or four,
yeah,
and it's just me, right? My attention can't be on somebody's going to roam.
Yes.
You know, and I'm going to miss it.
Yes.
So what do I do then?
I mean, I think, I'm not saying that this is the answer, but intentionality obviously is required when you parent. You can't just coast, you can't just guess it. But I think spending quality time with each child separately, yes, spend time together as a family nucleus, but spending time separate. And I think also having that village that can kind of take a look, you know, what you're doing a little bit. And I've given my village that permission to. If you see something, say something. And I've had moments where I've had, like, let's say even my bestie, like, hey, I think you're starting to lead from a place of, well, I don't want my kids to experience X, Y, and Z because I did. Mm-hmm. And nothing's wrong with that, but you also can't go completely the opposite way.
But I don't want my kids to experience what I experienced. We're not going to talk about me, though.
I mean, we want the best for them. Right. Like, we don't want them to endure the pains we've endured, and we want them to have the things that we didn't have that we wish we would have had. And so I think that's normal.
You know, I've seen mixed thoughts about that, though, right? In wanting your kids to have what you didn't have, right? I think that can be it can become an issue because... Listen, me growing up, I'm not saying that we were like poor, but I didn't have everything I wanted. But that don't mean I'm going to go out and get my sons everything that they want.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, because I didn't have it, I want you to have it. No, I just want you to have a better life.
Yeah.
right? I just want you to do more with your God-given purpose, your talent, whatever it is, right? I just want you to go further in life. Now, the necessities, I got that because I'm the parent, right? But all the materialism and everything else, hey, look, if you get it, cool. If you don't, life ain't gonna end.
Yeah.
So that's just kind of my thoughts, you know, around that. And, you know, I see that, though. I see people get lost in that, like, oh, I want to give my kid everything that I didn't have. And yeah, but what about the stuff they really need?
Right. And at that point, it becomes about them, not the kid.
Right.
Because to me, it's like, can they, and I know God does this well with us humans, can you handle what I'm trying to bless you with? You know, the Lord said, I've already given you my most precious thing. That's my son. So I'm not going to deny you anything.
Right.
Unless it's, you know, for your own good.
Yeah.
Question is, can we handle it? And there's something about spoiling a child a little too much. What kind of child are we raising?
And I think we talked about that last show. Are you raising a Judah?
We went from Cain to Judah.
Right. Are you raising a Abel?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Are you raising a Sodom and Gomorrah? Mm. Listen, everybody had parents.
That's true.
Even the bad ones had parents,
mm-hmm.
you know, and as a parent, you don't know. No. You like you said earlier, I just hope for the best. I want the right. best for my child. Well, what if your child doesn't want the best?
Mm. I mean, well, we have to at least try to fight for them to try to walk the straight and narrow path.
Absolutely.
I think
Absolutely.
The chances are higher for them to get it right. Well, they might make a mistake, but they'll always come home,
right.
so to speak.
Right.
But I don't know. I think my question to you is, what happens when you have that child that's a little bit rebellious? Like, you're laying down the law, you're telling them this is how it's going to be, but they're always challenging the thought process. They're always challenging, why are we doing this?
So, great question, by the way. And, you know, I've not only thought about this question, but I've also experienced it, mm-hmm. right? Because I do have I have two children that are rebellious.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it's because they just want to be rebellious. It's more so the influence that they may be encountering. You know, both of my older boys, they live in Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I mean, 18 and 22, you're kind of label grown. So, but even before that, I think the rebellious came from, you know, just them. Sometimes you can get guidance,
mm-hmm.
but you feel like you know better. If mm-hmm. that makes sense.
Yes. So it's kind of like in through one ear and out through the other, because that
Absolutely.
Filter in between kind of is saying, yeah,
so, good example.
Mm-hmm.
When I was in high school, you know, I was dating this girl, and, you know, just like, you know, anybody, you know, a teenager, they, hey, mom, you know, it's my girlfriend. I want you to meet her. And, you know, your mom is giving you advice about, or your dad, or, you know, whoever, right? Your parents giving you advice about her. And they may say, well, I don't think she's good for you.
Mm-hmm.
In your mind, you're like, you just don't like her. But as a parent, I see something you don't see. So you may get that advice from a parent, and in your mind, you're thinking, well, mm-hmm. they just don't like her, so I'm gonna date her anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So that rebelliousness comes, you know, just as a result that you thinking you know better. And that's what, you know, kind of experienced with my boys. And, you know, for one of them, it kind of led him down the wrong path. And, you know, now you got to kind of face some consequences of that. But
mm-hmm.
when you're dealing with a rebellious child, I think it's really, really important to figure out what's drawing them away from you. And, you know, whatever that is, that's where you start the conversation at. Like, what's drawing them away from you?
Mm-hmm.
Because they're being rebellious for a reason. And you know, the sooner you can kind of figure that out and have a conversation around it, I think, you know, the better off you'd be.
There's a disconnect in a way. So circling back, you're talking about this girlfriend. So were there, did mom ever explain exactly what did she see?
No, it was just more so like, you know, when you're a parent, you, mm-hmm. you figure that you know best for your child.
There's no explanation.
Like, nah, this is it wasn't. What I see. She was just more so like, I just don't like her for you. Hmm. You know, she's not it. And, you know, I mean, who would know me better than my mom?
Was there a high price to pay in the end? Or did you listen to mom?
I actually didn't listen to mom because, you know, this girl is my son's mother. So, yeah, I didn't listen to mom. I just kept going. But, you know, again, yeah. I think it's part of being a teenager.
No, I married my disobedience.
See?
But yeah. I just wish mom and dad, because mom and dad were like, that's not the guy for you. That's not the guy for you. And they never explained why. Sometimes I wish, like, why didn't you explain?
Yeah.
It got to the point they're like, you can go ahead and get married. We're not showing up. And they didn't.
Oh, wow.
And they didn't.
So wait a minute, hold up. So one of the best moments of your life, and this is for like women in general, because I mean, you guys fantasize about getting married. Like, one day I want to be married. Mm-hmm. And the best moment of your life, the people that you love the most don't show up.
And what's sad about it is that I didn't even marry out of love. It was more out of rebellion.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. I had no business marrying. Wow. It was more like, you know, we grew up in a Christian household and you don't go and live with a boy. You don't do that. So I'm like, well, bet. Mm. I'll move in with the boy and sure, I'll be married.
Mm. So I'm going to show y'all.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, thinking that you know more.
It was a high price to pay. I mean, hung in there 15 years, but it was a high price to pay. And when it got really bad, it was almost like they're going to say, I told you so, in the back of my mind.
You just hate to hear those words. I even now, I just hate to hear, like, I told you so. You ain't tell me nothing.
Their love and their mercy, though, and their grace, I haven't heard, and I told you so from them.
Really?
And that, yes, mom and dad, that means a lot. Right. I mean, I think it's like you've learned your lesson. And I'm still, you know, there's consequences to it because now my kids don't have a dad and it's like, I'm sorry because I did that.
Right.
But yeah, high price. So kids, if you're watching this, listen to your parents. Like,
do you guys ever like revisit that? Because when we were out in Orlando, you went to see your parents, right?
Yes.
Right. Shout out to mom and dad. Mm-hmm. Round of applause for mom and dad. You know, beautiful family. And your sister and everything as well. But like, does that conversation ever come up? Like, man, you know, hey, y'all told me don't marry him and I did it. And, you know, now, so does that ever come up?
No, it's one of those things that it's not said, but we know.
Gotcha.
We know.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
And it's, I'm back. Like, they lost me for a bit, the essence of who I was. So mm-hmm. it's like their comments like, oh, you're back.
Right.
Oh, okay, you're better. But I've had to have that conversation with my kids because mm-hmm. it's like, this is the mistake that I made. And you never want to say that to your kids because it's like, okay, well, if you hadn't made the mistake, you wouldn't be here. You know what my kids told me? I just think they're a little profound. I'm like, well, we would have been assigned to you anyway.
Okay, listen. How about that faith? How about that faith mm-hmm. right there? I love that.
Well, yeah, it's you deal with the ramifications of your mistakes. Mm-hmm. But I think, I don't know, I think that's why I tend to over-explain myself as a mom. Like, if I'm telling you no, mm-hmm. I want you to understand the why. Maybe I won't tell you everything, right. But I want you to understand at least a little bit as to why I'm telling you this person may not be the best friend or why maybe you shouldn't do this and that. Right. And I think it keeps them calm, but sometimes they think that I need to explain everything. And that's where you kind of just like,
gotcha.
Not the time.
Gotcha.
Not the time.
Yeah. I think I'm pretty open with my boys and kind of talking about certain things, you know. Like you said, I'm not going to tell you everything, but, you know, I am going to let you know what's going on. Right. I saw a video about this one time where it's like, hey, how much do you open up to your kids? Do you tell them about, hey, you know, dad had a bad day today, or hey, you know what, financially dad is kind of struggling with some stuff, so, you know, we got to cut back on it. Like, do you have those open, real talk conversations with your kids?
Just talked to my daughter about it this morning.
Oh,
this is, you know, we were May and June, it's a very expensive month. First of all, I have two birthdays, Mother's Day, like,
talk about
out of school,
and
they're eating half the house, especially the boy. It's just an expensive season.
God bless summertime.
Yes, so I'm preparing my kids now for, I'm going to be very busy because I need to figure out, outside of the 8 to 5, how to provide. And so I had asked her, I was like, when I tell you guys this, you just want to know, hey, this is what's going on in detail. These are the things that I need to take care of. Or like, how much do you want to know?
I'd love to know the response to that. Like, how much do you want to know? Because, listen, at some point, you're going to be a parent yourself, God willing. Right. And hopefully you take from this example and say, you know what, I really need to talk to my kids and let them know. How much do you want to know? Because it's a lot to be an adult.
It is a lot. And I think we can overwhelm them. And sometimes you got to gauge, especially their age. Like, can they handle this right now? Like, because I had read the other day on it might have been Threads, actually, where somebody has said, you know, I don't want to cause my kids stress if there's financial trouble at home. I don't want them to worry about things. I went through that at 15, seeing my parents struggle and felt like I had to get a job to provide in the house.
Right.
So I understood that comment. But no, my child is like, hey, as long as mom, you know, the things I want, she wants to go to camp and wants to do this outing and that outing. She just wants to know, can I do it? Yes or no.
Right.
And that's it. I'm like, okay. So I guess I won't be oversharing.
Hey, listen, you asked for it. Just right. Remember, you asked for this.
Right. You know? Now, I will still inform them what's going on. And I told her this. I was like, I never want you to think that work or, you know, extra gigs or whatever is more important than you. I'm still communicating what I'm doing for context.
Right.
That I'm not choosing that over spending time with you guys. And I'm still going to be intentional about it.
Absolutely. I think that's important.
Yeah. But no, I became, I think, an over communicator as a parent because of the way that I grew up. And I don't know if it's too much.
Well, I don't think it's, as long as you're not kind of pulling them in to, because I still think there's separation. There's boundaries being a parent, because, you know, you hear all the time, hey, look, I'm your parent, I'm not your friend. So I think there has to be boundaries around what we talk about and, you know, what you feel comfortable talking to me about.
Right.
Again, as a parent, I do want to know everything, but, you know, I know you're not going to tell me everything.
They're not.
You know, and because I was a teenager before, I didn't tell my mom everything, you know, but when I needed to talk to her, I did. And I felt safe enough to do that. So, you know, for me, that's the thing. Like, hey, look, I just want you to feel safe enough to come and talk to me about the things you feel like, hey, you ain't got nowhere else to go.
Right. So what made it safe? What what about it made you identify that this is a safe space?
With my mom? Really, I guess it was our relationship. You know, my oldest brother, he was kind of off doing his thing, college and stuff. So it was really me, my mom, my sister. And at the time, you know, mom was working, going to school. So I'm kind of watching my sister. But, you know, again, I'm being a teenager myself. But just over time, you know, going through high school and off into college and kind of being a young adult, you know, being it was us three, our relationship grew close with one another because we all we had. So, you know, from that, I just kind of felt comfortable and I didn't really have any other avenue to talk. Like I said, my brother was kind of in and out and my uncle, You know, he was somebody I can go get a man's perspective from, even to this day. Mm-hmm. You know, we still have conversations. he'll love when he see this. But that was my outlet to just really talk about things. So, you know, I've always kind of felt comfortable speaking to my mom, and we've had that open dialogue with one another. And that was just it for me.
That was it. I mean, and it sounds like she didn't flip out with things that you had to share. Because I know some parents, you know, they want the kids to talk to them, but it's how do you react when they're sharing the things that they are sharing? Are you listening? Or are you cutting them off? I mean, because I think that's important.
For me, I'm always inquisitive. Like, I'm asking follow-up questions. Mm-hmm. So I'm listening, mm-hmm. but so my kids talk to me, they know there's a series of questions that are mm-hmm. coming behind what you're telling me.
Okay, because, what's the motive behind them?
Because I want to know what state of mind you're in. Mm-hmm. I want to know, why is this something that's of concern to you, or that's, you know, whatever this is that's going on, what are you thinking about it?
Yeah.
Because I always looked at it like, before I go tell my parent about it, I've already tried to figure it out myself.
That's true.
You know what I'm saying? So if I've already tried to figure it out myself, again, I want to know where you're at with that.
Right.
Like, how did you, exactly. So that's kind of how I approach it when you know, when my boys kind of come to me and mm-hmm. talk about different things. So, you know, it's always a series of questions that's coming behind it.
I don't even think that goes away as an adult.
Mm-mm. Not at all. Because the more questions you ask, the better you understand, right?
That's
but
true.
You also got to make sure you're asking the right questions, right? And not just anything, right? Make sure you're asking the right questions so you can get the answers you need.
Okay. So for parents out there that are trying to make that safe space, because, you know, we're talking about gentle parenting. I don't think this falls into gentle parenting. It's more like wise parenting.
Right.
What tips can we give them on how to be able to have better conversations with the kids?
So I would start by saying, you know, make sure you're having conversations with your kids, because there's some parents that they're not having any conversations, they're not talking, they don't know anything. So when something happens, they're like,
didn't see that coming.
Exactly. Like, it's out the blue, right? So I think it's first is really having conversation with your kids. And it could be something as simple as, you know, their favorite thing they like to do, you know, hey, how's that coming along? You know, or mm-hmm. got a lot of kids right now that are kind of into content creation. Hey, mm-hmm. you know, I saw this, you know, I thought this might interest you a little bit. I know you were trying to go down this road and do this. So just having open conversations, getting to know your kids a little bit more. Also, I would say, be the example, right? Which we were just talking about a few minutes ago. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have conversations with them to let them know, hey, look, dad feels it's okay to talk to me about what's going on. So
yeah,
maybe I can talk to him about what's going on with me.
Yes.
You know, so. And finally, I'll give you three. So the third one is, My oldest son, we went to therapy.
Yeah.
Yeah, we went to therapy. And, you know, it was kind of eye-opening.
What, tell us about that?
Well, it was something that I felt was needed for him at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just kind of by me being in the room, I was like, well, you know, because it wouldn't hurt for me to kind of open up a little bit as well. So, yeah, therapy. If you guys are at that point, you know, if a child is old enough and, you know, you feel like that would be a benefit, then I would always recommend, you know, therapy. But like I said, just having conversations with them and, you know, finding out what they like and just kind of starting there. And then make sure you're asking, you know, good questions and then let them know, hey, look, let them be your outlet sometimes, right? Just lead by example.
Mm-hmm. I think also important too is our reaction to what they're telling us.
Right.
Because when they get comfortable, it's like, I can't believe it's cool that you're sharing.
You know, that's something that kind of plagued me early on.
Yeah.
My response to stuff. And that really kind of shut things down. Because there was a time, and mm-hmm. I'm glad that I really kind of caught wind of it. And talking at your kids instead of talking to them. So that was a big thing for me that I'm glad I was able to, you know, kind of figure it out and get away from that.
Well, that's good, because, I mean, I feel like a lot of parents do tend to, they don't know what to do with the information.
Right.
And then they go the rest of their lives just either cutting them off and try to give their perspective without full context, or flip out. And then that just, I don't know, it's a bitter taste, I would say. I'm not sharing with you nothing.
But wait, I'll tell you, when it gets to that point though, or if it ever does get to that point, just know that you lost them.
Is it possible to regain that, you think? Or
it's always possible. It's always possible. You know, just like with any relationship, you got to build that trust back up. But you know, when, like I said, when it gets to that point, you've, and I won't say you've lost them all the way, right? But just know that they're getting guidance from somewhere else, when they should really be getting guidance from you.
That. Yeah. Now, we were talking earlier about two-parent household versus one.
Shout out to the two-parent households.
Yes.
Two-parent households versus single-parent households.
Yeah, I mean, because both mom and dads are needed. They're very different, but we're needed, both of us.
Yes, absolutely. I agree 1,000%. Both parties are needed. Because, again, like we talked about earlier, it's just a different perspective on how men parent versus how women parent. And, you know, certain things that you teach, I'm not really prevalent to teach, and vice versa. So I think when there's a single parent household, not to say that still can't come out in good nature, because I came from a single parent household, you know, and my mom did, you know, everything that she could, best she could. And I think we turned out great in that manner. So would have been different if it was a two parent household? Yeah, probably. Right. But there's also two parent households that
are toxic.
Very. Very. I didn't want to use that word, but yeah, very, very toxic. Very toxic. So, you know, I think with that being said, though, you just kind of figure out, hey, how can I make this work? And we're very, I guess, keen on single parent households with mom, but there's a lot of single dad.
That's right.
Yeah. A lot of single dads out there. I was actually looking at something earlier where it said moms now are giving the kids to the dad and saying, hey, put me on child support. I'll pay child support.
Are you serious?
I read that. I promise I read it just like that. And I was like, wow.
Did they say why? Like, what's leading society towards that?
So, I don't even know if I can still pull it back up. Shout out to Threads. But I was reading that, and I was kind of blown away by it, because I was like, what? All the stuff surrounding child support and dads and stuff like that. A mom saying, you know what?
You're just tired.
I'm tired. I'll just pay child support, you know, and go about it like that.
But, like, while you pull that up, what would you say is the difference, the way society views a single mom versus a single dad? I feel there's a lot of assumptions.
Shout out to the single moms. You know, shout out to the single moms. you know, at the end of the day, I don't really look at like comparison because mm-hmm. hey, you're both parents.
That's right.
Whether you're single dad, single mom, whatever, both parents and you both got a responsibility to uphold. So you see moms actually do it more mm-hmm. By themselves. And, you know, I mean, with that being said, I mean, you can't take nothing away from them. But I think it's kind of flopped now. Mm-hmm. You know, you're starting to see more single dads kind of just really step up and take the child or whatever and, you know, still make it work. So, mm-hmm. again, I don't look at it as a comparison of who's better or not. Hey, look, at the end of the day, y'all both parents. Mm-hmm. And it's really about the child. It's no longer about us.
Right.
So,
yeah, as a parent.
Yeah.
I don't know if I ever told you. I might have shared it in the class. I actually don't go by the term single mom. It annoys me.
I don't think you should.
Mm-mm. Because for some people, and I'm sorry if this is you, it's no offense, it just becomes their whole identity. Can't do this because I'm a single mom. Can't do that because I'm a single mom. And I understand there are challenges, but I'm like, I'm a woman that happens to be single and happens to be a mom. Because we don't go around telling married people, well, you're a married dad or you're a married mom.
You are right.
You're just a parent.
Absolutely. You're just a parent. Absolutely.
I don't know. I had somebody. And also having stuff outside of your kids that, you know, hobbies, right. friendships and stuff. Because
right.
Some people really make their kids their identity in a way.
They do. They do. And I've even heard people, you know, go as far as say, well, you know, this is all I got. Well, I mean, I can't tell you to think differently, you know, but in the same sense, you know, I never wanted to name my son after me or any of my boys after me because mm-hmm. I wanted them to have their own identity. Mm-hmm. I wanted them to, you know, I didn't want them to live in the shadow of me.
Yeah.
Or, you know, because, again, you still have my last name, so you're carrying on the lineage, mm-hmm. right? But I don't want you to just be a me. I want you to be your own person. Yeah. So I think with what, you know, what you were just talking about right there, for some of us, you know, we use our kids as, you know, the front runner sometimes, mm-hmm. like saying, well, that's all I got. Well, it's, you know,
you're a whole person.
You're a whole person, right? You're a whole person. And I just don't believe in that way of thinking. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't believe in that way of thinking.
Do you think that putting your identity in who you are as a parent, do you think that's what leads to empty nesting? Like that I'm crashing and I'm really depressed now that my child has moved out?
No, because I mean, for some parents, it's like, man, I can't wait till you move out. Like, you on the clock. Like,
I need to make that room of yours.
You know, like, some parents just can't wait. Mm-hmm. But for some, yeah. You know, you feel like you've lost a piece of something, right? When your kid leaves the nest, you know, because again, hey, you've been a parent for, you know, 18, 19, 20 years, whatever. So when they finally, hey, they're at a place where, you know, they feel like they can, you know, go on their own. So we were talking about, where were we?
I don't even know.
That's a technical difficulty. Mm-hmm. You know, just kind of faded the black on the screen. Mm-hmm. But now we're back. Now we're back. Round of applause. Round of applause for being back. So going back into, you know, this thing about parenting, you know, one of the things that we put up on the board that we wanted to kind of talk about, I guess. And I think we kind of explored this a little bit earlier, right? When you're supporting your child's endeavors, mm-hmm. right? What happens when they don't have the same beliefs you have, right? Do you continue to support when they go against your beliefs? Or do you say, kind of instance, what your parents said, hey, if you're going against what I'm saying, I'm out of here. I'm not coming.
I mean, when we say beliefs, are we talking about like biblical beliefs, theological beliefs?
Well, let's start there. Let's start biblical, right? Because,
yeah.
You know, I think it's a newness in this generation right now, how much they actually believe in God or what they think about God, or just the Christian religion in general, right? Mm-hmm. So in our class, you remember there was a lady whose daughter was, I don't think she was an atheist, but she was kind of interested in it.
Yeah.
Something to that effect.
She was an alleged atheist.
Alleged. Quote unquote. Yes.
But she didn't sound too atheist to me because she was asking questions about God. And so at that point, I'm like, okay, so you're not fully cemented in these beliefs you claim to be cemented in.
But what happens with that, though? Like, you know, because now, especially as a parent, you have your belief system, you know, whatever you was raised on or what, you know, whatever you follow, whatever religion that is. There are some values that kind of conduct the way that you approach life, just the way you live.
Right. I mean, I think we need to get to the heart as to why this is coming up. Questions ought to be expected. And I think in a lot of Christian households, it's how dare you question X, Y, and Z. We don't question. This is what it is. And it's like, wait a minute. You didn't become who you became in your beliefs overnight. At least I didn't.
Right.
Initially, yes, I'm going to church because that's what mom and dad said we're going to do. But at some point, kind of like what David told Solomon in 1 Chronicles 28, I want to say verse 9, he said, get to know the God of your ancestors intimately. That means don't follow him because I'm telling you to follow him.
Right.
You need to get to know him intimately and understand why you believe in him and take it from there. But I think we need to ought to be prepared to answer questions about God versus seeing them as, oh, you're challenging beliefs. So to speak, they're asking for a reason.
Right.
And if they're not asking, they're telling you. You need to figure out where the disconnect happened. Like, why do they not feel the same way as you about God?
Well, I think you said something important. If they're not asking, right? I think you should be asking. Right? If they're not coming to you and asking, I think you should be asking. Especially, you know, now with this day and age where I think religion is so important. Right? It's one of those things that, you know, you kind of don't want to talk about at a party, but I think it's super important to talk about with your kids just to kind of know, hey, look, there's certain morals and values that I was born with or born and raised upon. So I want to instill those same values here within my home. And I think that's a conversation you should have with your kids. So if they're not asking, hey, you should be asking them.
And I think it's modeling too. And I know we keep saying this a lot, but you have to model it.
Right.
Even the ugly parts. I mean, I'm not always on the mountaintop. There are times where I'm struggling to pray. I'm opening the word and I'm like, Lord, I'm not getting nothing. I'm sorry, but I'm not.
Help me.
Or Lord,
help me.
I had time to open that physical book, but I'm gonna put you on audio. And even then it's like, why? You just feel like you're in this dry season, so to speak. And where I've had moments where I've grieved, like, man, I don't feel as close to you as I am. And those conversations during our spiritual check-in, like, hey, how's your walk? You have to be honest about it because not everything is the mountaintop.
Right.
You'll have those moments. But I think that's a question. And I tend to ask people that. It throws them off guard. It's tell me about your walk because they don't expect it.
That's deep. That's deep. Tell me about your walk.
Right?
Because if you're asking me that, one, you're catching me off guard because I'm not thinking about it. Not, I guess, in the same sense that I should be. Right. But you ask me that question, you kind of catch me off guard. Hey, man, tell me about your walk. It's like, oh.
To expect that question. I throw it randomly at people.
Listen, like, you got to be ready to answer that. Because if you can't, then it's like, oh, I don't want to look crazy because I can't answer about what my walk looked like.
No, but you have to be honest about it.
Right.
Because I'm telling you, sometimes you are in these dry valleys where it's like, I have not been able. For example, I've gone through seasons. I'm like, why can I pray for other people?
Right.
Or maybe I should be praying for my kids more and I just am not there.
I've been through seasons where you're in that questioning season. Like, man, I feel like I'm doing everything right, God. Why haven't I progressed? Why haven't I moved anywhere? Like, why am I still here? Why am I still experiencing this, going through this, right? That questioning season. So, you know, I think, you know, again, knowing what season you're in or what your walk is like, but just having somebody ask you that question to kind of keep you on your toes, I think that's important.
How's your walk? And showing that rawness before the Lord. First of all, like, why are we trying to pretend in His presence? That I'm annoyed at myself when I do that, because it's like He already knows it. He already knows where we're coming from. And I think it's okay to be in a space where it's like, I trust you, but I'm also upset that you're making me wait, or I trust you, but I'm not okay with your timing. I'm sorry. This is where I'm at. But I think if we don't share that with our kids, how are they supposed to know what a walk, real walk, looks like? Because it's not fun, and it's not always perfect. Like, at least I fail a lot. And if they see that, at least some of it.
You know, I kind of think back, because none of this stuff was talked about when I was a teenager. I'll just be honest. My mom didn't have these conversations with us. You know, like, well, what's your walk like? Or, you know, like, we went to church, but wasn't really a prerequisite that, hey, you get into this book and you learn this, or you follow this teaching. Like, that wasn't, like, drilled upon us. Like I said, we went to church. You know, we knew what Jesus was, who He was, things of that nature. But just really getting into that book and understanding the teachings of it didn't kind of come for me till later on in life. But you said something earlier that, you know, God knows. What would He say about your parenting?
I think He would say, you probably are putting too much pressure on yourself. And I've had a lot of forgiving of self to do, because I told you, it still breaks my heart. And that's one area I'm working on forgiving myself. It's, I chose your dad, and I'm sorry, because now you don't have one. It still breaks my heart.
Do you think that was like, So do you look at that as, hey, I made a bad decision, or that was just a circumstance of life?
I made a bad decision. And also lingering longer than I should have, because it affected them. It affected them.
Gotcha.
So I've had some forgiving of self to do, and been honest with the kids about it. Like, I am sorry. But I think the Lord would tell me, like, listen, keep it moving. Like, you're fine. You're fine.
I don't think people give God enough credit. God kind of cool, for real. Yeah. Like, man, come on.
Let's keep merciful, because He'll use it He'll use it anyway. It's a whole new level of resilience I see in the kids. It's one of those things where if I say we got to go somewhere in 30 minutes, it could be packed. The kids have, we've lived in 200 square feet, the three of us. We know, kind of like Paul, maybe not to the extent of Paul, but we know what it is to have a lot, to have a little. We know what it's, they're pretty resilient. So I'm sure that whatever they have experienced, God is going to use it for good. That's all I can trust.
I think that's important. I think that's important.
But let's go back to this upbringing and church thing, because hearing you talk about yours, I'm like, okay, my parents were a little neurotic then. For starters, let me tell you this. Mom would make me sit down before school and read scripture. And the lady,
before school?
Yes.
Okay.
And then she had this idea when I was 8 that I needed to be in a Bible competition. So this is before audiobooks and things like that. She would record herself reading the Bible in a Walkman. So you're already annoyed. I had to hear my mother in my ears reading the scripture. But I think the most embarrassing was Dad, because he would pull up to the school, and before we got out the car, he's like, hold on, girls, and we'll bring out the anointing, like the anointed oil.
Oh man, not at school.
So we would, yes, he would pray for us in front of everybody, and then we would go to school with this dab of oil.
Greasy.
Yes.
Just forehead, just greasy.
And I know he meant well, and that's great. It's just, it's embarrassing. And then you feel bad, like, I don't think I'm supposed to wipe this off.
What grade was this in, by chance? Like, what grade was this? Come on. Was this high school?
It was in middle school.
Middle school, okay.
Yes.
All right, all right. Yeah. So middle school, you can still kind of live it down. Like, I was in middle school. It didn't happen in high school. So, you know, high school is like your cool years. So
No, it phased out.
Absolutely.
Oh, my goodness. But it was so embarrassing. But, you know, a lot of parents, I think, too, they take, I want to say it's the last book of Joshua where it says, hey, for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. And I think there is, yes, me and my house will serve the Lord. You run your household how you need to run your household. But I think that attitude sometimes gets carried away into, how dare you question the living God? Mm. How dare you even ask questions? You believe in him because you got to believe in him. And I think it takes a minute for you to choose God for yourself. And it, even then, it comes in phases.
Absolutely.
So, like, absolutely. When did you choose God for yourself?
It was probably... You know, I've always seen him do things in my life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's easy to say, oh, God, thank you, you know. Mm-hmm. But I think it really came for me in '07, I'm going to say. Mm-hmm. And it might have been later than that. Might have been, because, I mean, I came back to Virginia in 06, I believe. So it might have been 06, 07.
Okay.
And, you know, at that time, I was kind of going through that dark valley that you were just talking about earlier. And I was living in Georgia, and a lot of things just weren't going my way. And just had my second son, and I was sleeping on somebody else's couch at the time.
It's a rough season.
Very rough season. Very rough time for me. And like I said, a lot of things weren't going my way. And it was one of those moments where, man, you're just looking up at the ceiling, and you just pouring your heart out to God. Like, mm-hmm. please just take me out of this. Mm. Like, just please get me out of this situation.
Crying out to the Lord.
Just crying out to him. And, you know, at that moment, I got a phone call from my mom. At the time, she had moved back, her and my sister, they had moved back to Virginia. So it was just kind of me by myself in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And, I was just like, hey, look, I need to come home. So, you know, having that space, having that opportunity to kind of, hey, just reset.
Yeah.
And to me, that was God showing himself in my life, mm-hmm. giving me the chance to just reset and come home, start over, and get myself together. And again, that's kind of when it just kind of became apparent to me. But because from there, me coming back to Virginia, mm-hmm. I got myself together, started going to Calvary. Mm-hmm. That's right before they moved out of the old building in Beachmont. Mm-hmm. So, like I said, things started to kind of align and fall into place and, you know, just continue from there. So, I think that was that moment where, you know, he just kind of appeared in my life.
You know, I read something, it might have been yesterday, that says, when you ask somebody, when was the time in your life that you got closer to God? Not one person will mention a good time.
Because it's always you always seem that he comes in that, not to say he don't come in good times, mm-hmm. but he really shows up in the time of need. Mm-hmm. Like, man, you was right on time, because I didn't have no idea I was going to get through this.
Right. We just cry out to him in desperation. But I love how you had at least something in you to that I'm going to assume it has to do with the pouring that mom did throughout the years.
Yeah.
That has just kind of led you back to at least know that you have a creator that you can cry out to.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I don't think we talk enough about how, like, when we talk about the village,
mm-hmm.
you know, usually talking about it from a standpoint of, hey, like you said earlier, if you see some, say some type, you mm-hmm. know, your mom got eyes everywhere type. But I don't think we talk enough about the village and how the village prays for you.
Mm.
Right? Because, man, I had aunts and my grandmother and my friends of my mother. Like, you always would hear, hey, I'm praying for you. I'm praying for you. So just how much the village prays for you mm-hmm. in your, as you're going through your go through. You know, mm-hmm. I think we don't talk enough about that.
No, not at all. And sometimes it's not even the village people. For example, I tend to be that person where it's like, God will wake me up 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning. You're just a little irritated because it's like, I need my sleep.
Yeah. God,
but it's like, you best get up and start praying for this person, and Holy Spirit will show you how to pray for that person. And sometimes God will do that with certain people. And I've often wondered, I wish I could pray like that for my kids. You know, I wonder, like, has anybody ever prayed like that for me? But I had this one random person at the church be like, yo, I was praying for you and your kids. They're not even part of the village, but it lets you know that as a parent, you're not out here alone.
Right.
He will get somebody to pray for you.
Yeah. Even if it seems awkward and weird.
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, what are you praying for me for? I don't even know you. Like, where's that coming from? But you never know.
Well, and another thing too, other than the tell me about your walk, you know, what's one question I ask people, and you'll probably get this from me every so often, is how can I pray for you this week?
Mm. You know, we were doing something like that in our men's group.
Mm-hmm.
This was some years ago. I joined a men's group, and you know, that's one of the things that they did, you know, periodically. It's like, hey, you know, how can I pray for you today? Mm-hmm. Or who needs prayer right now?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's something super important as well, because I mean, look, every single day is a battle.
That's true.
Every single day is a battle.
Can you imagine if we were to ask our kids that? I might do it.
You should.
Like,
right?
How can I pray for you?
Listen, like, I would want to hear their response. How can I pray for you today? You know, I need some money for real. You can pray that. Hey, shout out to the kids. Shout out to the kids. As a parent, what's a hard no for you?
Sleepovers.
Mmm.
And we have had this.
Some of my best friends is because we had sleepovers.
They can come to my house.
But the kids can't go over there.
No, the only person, it's maybe my parents, my sister, and their godparents. And even then, it's very rare.
Mm. Why do you think that is? What has kind of led you to say, you know what, that's a hard no for me, no sleepovers? What's kind of led to that?
Culturally, it's a thing we don't do. Okay. That's for starters.
So growing up in your culture, there was no sleepovers?
No, the only one time mom let me sleep over was at her pastor's house because he had a daughter I was friends with.
Got it.
That was a one-time sleepover, but we just don't do it. Especially if I don't know how things are ran in the household, if I don't know the parents well. So for me to have entrusted, which it's Bestie and her husband, they're my kids' godparents.
Right.
They've been fully vetted, given testimony. Like, when you know who they are, to the point where we're so tight, like we have keys to each other's house. Like, that's how tight we are. You can sleep over there. And because I don't have relatives that live in town.
Right.
So that's it. But I don't know. It's just not a thing we do. I rather, hey, you can invite the person over here.
Right. I mean, that makes sense. That makes sense. And I think we were talking about that one time before, like vetting as parents. Hey, you know, I do care who you hang out with,
mm-hmm.
but I want to know their parents. I want to know them. Mm-hmm. If you're going to be spending time with them, I feel like I should know them too.
Yeah.
Just in case, you know, something happens.
Okay. So tell me about these sleepovers. So you went to sleep over at other people's house.
I did.
Is that often?
Not often. but you know, maybe once or twice.
Okay.
Right. But I also had sleepovers at my house as well. And I think, you know, it only came from what I just described. Like, hey, look, my parents knew their parents, or, you know, my mom knew their mom or whatever. It wasn't like it was a random sleepover. It was, hey, some kids that I kind of grew up with, or kids that I hung out with normally.
Like cousins type.
Yeah, you know, so, and see, that was always my thing, especially when I went to my grandmother's house, right? I always wanted to stay at my cousin's house.
Mm-hmm.
It was just more fun over there.
It's different, like, with the cousins,
yeah,
though.
You know what I'm saying? It was just more fun over there. But I think, you know, for me, I probably would approach it the same way. Hey, look, you can have them come over here. Cause usually it's, you know, it's, they enjoy it over here better anyway.
Right.
You know, so.
So are you the cool parent, like, amongst, like, your kids' friends, out of all the parents in the friend group? Are you the cool parent?
I would definitely call myself the cool parent, just because I'm just more relatable.
Mm.
You know, at least I feel that way anyway. And, you know, I'm the type where I always put myself in their shoes.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I know when I was, you know, a teenager, you get bored quick. So, you know, if y'all gonna be over here, make sure, you know, we kind of hang out, you know, because I'm still a kid at heart. You know, I still get on the video games with my boys and play, you know, sports talk, you know, I do all that stuff. So, you know, I try to put myself in their shoes and stay relatable as much as I can, because I do want to be the cool parent, but I don't want to get lost in being the cool parent.
Right.
To where,
it's a fine line.
Exactly. So but you got to set boundaries.
You just brought up a good point. It's not all conversation. Sometimes it's actually doing the stuff that they want to do.
Absolutely.
I remember when that, I don't know if you remember the game, it was around the pandemic, Among Us. Remember that?
Yeah.
Me and my son, hardcore.
Yeah.
we would play a lot, but that's how I was able to connect with him. They try to get me on Roblox. I don't have the time.
Yeah,
so they still
I
do.
Can't do Roblox.
Yeah.
Listen, I'm not gonna be buying different skin. I just can't do it.
Yeah.
I can't do it.
Yeah. And even now they're like, you wanna play? No, I can't.
I tried to get down on the other one though. What was the other one?
Minecraft, maybe?
Not Minecraft. Oh, it was a big game that was out. Man.
It'll come to you.
Yeah. What was that game that every kid was on that game when it came out? Because you had to build and stuff. And, oh, man, when it comes to me, I can't think of it right now.
Yeah. But don't take it too far. Because the last time I tried to be cool, it was actually my son's birthday last year in May. So we're going to skate together. That's right.
Oh, yeah. You better than me, because I don't skate.
Listen, I fell skate. And broke my butt bone. That was so goodness. Painful. Yes. Last time I tried to be cool.
How long ago was this?
Almost a year ago.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, see.
It was for his birthday.
Look, there's certain things I already know. Not my wheelhouse. I ain't even trying it.
No.
But like I said, you know, we're still kind of kids at heart. So you want to engage with yours as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Like I love to do fun things and just show them different, you know, different things in life. Because to me, that's when we talked about earlier, oh, I want to give my kids everything I didn't have. Well, spending that time and showing them different things is giving them
experience over things.
Exactly.
That's what they're going to remember that more anyway.
Because yeah.
You give them something today.
It's in the closet tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Forget about it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm the parent. Look, I'm throwing stuff away.
Do you do inspections?
Listen, I hate clutter.
Mm-hmm.
I hate clutter. So, okay. Yeah, I'm that parent. I'm throwing stuff away. Especially if I see you ain't playing with it or it's collecting dust. Yeah, I'm definitely getting rid of it.
Okay. So let me ask you this. I'm glad we've segued into this part of the conversation. So we're kind of, you know, I don't want to say a minimalist household, but yeah, we're a clutter-free household. But at what point do you feel, because I've heard some parents say this, like the main spaces, your living room, dining room, your kitchen, you got to keep that clutter-free. But right. Their room is fair game. Do you believe that should be the case?
I don't believe there is fair game. Like, because I'm, so, and this goes back to how I was raised.
Mm-hmm.
My mother
That's right.
is a very cleanly person, OCD-ish. And that is something that I have picked up in my journey into adulthood, right? So I'm a cleanly person. Mm-hmm. Everything has a place type. So there is no fair game. Hey, you clean something, you got to clean everything. And if this is your where you lay your head and this is your domain, then I expect you to keep it clean. So bathroom too.
Okay, so how does that translate into the assignment of chores?
So when my boys were living with me, it was just me and them. We all had, you know, so we sat down and say, okay, hey, look, I ain't going to y'all bathroom, but I expect y'all to keep it clean and y'all figure out who gonna clean what. Who gonna clean the tub? Who gonna clean the toilet? Who gonna clean the sink? Who gonna empty the trash? Who gonna sweep? Who gonna wipe the mirror down? Not really. Because so my oldest son, you know, he, well, I'm gonna do this. You know, so he kind of took charge.
Yeah,
he took charge of some things, but you know, they made it work. They made it work, and you know, I was definitely following up behind them to see did y'all
inspection.
Do it? Exactly. I'm the inspector. But they did make it work, and I think it's imperative to kind of have that, because when you're on your own, at least you've already been instilled with this skill to where, hey, look, I know how to, you know, clean up after myself. So,
and I think a cluttered space affects them more than one can imagine. Cluttered space, cluttered mind.
Absolutely. That's why I, listen, I've been living like that for years.
Yeah.
That's why I keep my car the way I keep it. Like, I don't like stuff in my car. I don't like my car dirty, because I just feel like it's a reflection of how you live life. Same thing with your home. It's a reflection of how you live life. You keep your house clean, that means, hey, you appreciate things.
Yeah.
So
what advice would we give the parents who are struggling with, you know, because I've heard a lot, you know, our house has to look like it's lived in. It's not a museum. Like, they'll have that kind of attitude.
Do you live in a barn? Why don't you say that? You think you live in a barn? No. But yeah, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. As far as advice, you know, I guess I would say for parents now, you know, if you haven't structured your household, that might be a, you know, point of approach, right? To get some type of structure.
Like, hey, what does that look like?
Who does what? Who does it when? And, you know, if you have multiple kids, each person should be providing some type of value to that structure.
That's right.
Right? Somebody should be, hey,
contribution.
Some type of contribution. And, you know, I think it makes for better for everybody, because they're watching you get up and go to work every day and cook and make sure that, you know, you keep a roof over their head, keep the lights on and things of that nature. So it's okay to have that conversation with them to show them, hey, here's your responsibility for living in this house as well. You know, whether that's emptying the trash or cutting the grass or, you know, whatever that is, right? Not to pile a whole bunch up on your shoulders, but just understanding that, hey, I hold some responsibility as well for living here, and any way that I can help out the family, because that's always been my, you know, angle. Like, any way that I can help out my mom and my sister, you know, I'm willing to do so.
Which is a heart posture.
Yeah,
absolutely. It's a heart posture, and it's gonna help them in the end. Because you imagine sending selfish children out into the world?
There's a lot of them out here right now. A lot.
Entitlement.
And that was a conversation that came up the other day as well. I was talking to some people, and the reference of the conversation was kids having this approach, whereas they were just thinking about themselves. Mm-hmm. Right. It was almost like a selfish type of approach.
Egocentric type of attitude.
And you kind of think about, well, how did it get to that point? Mm. How did it? Where did that stem from to where, hey, mm-hmm. they got in the mind frame or the mindset of they're just thinking about themselves. They're not worried about anything else, anybody else. They just, hey, why can't I have it right now? Mm-hmm. What's in it for me? You know, and that's pretty much how they live.
It's a balance because you have to show service. Like, we're not here to be served, but to serve.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Do you think that has to be modeled too? Like, or you think it's just, I don't know.
I think it does. Mm-hmm. I think everything, you know, stems from an example. Mm-hmm. So whatever the example is, if it's enough for them to say, hey, look, I want to follow that. Mm-hmm. Or I want to do that as well because I see what good praises you get when you do it.
So like positive reinforcement.
Positive reinforcement.
Yeah. And, you know, one thing I heard this week, too, it's discipline in private and praise in public. Mm-hmm. And I thought about a video. You showed it to me. You might have to do a segment on it. When your kid is a bully.
Oh, wow. Yes.
Because, well, before I give my opinion, you want to walk us through the premise of this video.
So the video was of a mom. She was, and I think this video went viral, to be honest. Mm-hmm. But it was a mom in a hospital. Her son was laying in the hospital because he had gotten into it with a kid at school. He was being a bully to the kid, and the kid ended up giving it to him, right? Like, he put them hands on him, per se. And he put the kid in the hospital. So the mom was shooting a video, was like, hey, look, you know, I don't condone bullying, but this is a prime example of if you bully somebody, here's the consequences that could follow. And her son faced the consequences that followed, and the kid ended up beating him up, putting him in the hospital. So, you know, it was kind of like, how do you react to that as a parent? If you're the parent that kid was bullied, or, you know, you're the parent of a kid who is bullying kids at school, you know, how do you react to that? Because nobody would want their kid to be bullied or messed with or have them go to school in fear every day. Because I've experienced that, and that's not a good feeling. Mm-hmm. It's not a good feeling at all. So, you know, how would you react to that as a parent?
I'm going to tell you this. I agree with the mom in the sense that you have to stop it in its tracks. I had my daughter was in, I want to say, 7th grade. She got into a fight at school, which I'm like, what? Because we don't do that. So I'm going into investigative mode. Tell me about what happened. This is how I start my conversation. Tell me a little bit about what happened. And I'm asking follow-up questions. And because, you know, if you have to defend yourself, you have to defend yourself. Absolutely. What we're not going to do
is start
the fight. Well, footage came about. And of course, I'm reviewing the surveillance. This child was in the middle of the class. Like, this was like a
planned. Your child or the other child?
Yes.
Your child?
Yes. Okay. This was a planned fight.
Oh, my goodness.
I was like, see what we're not going to do. I was livid because I'm not raising a bully.
Right.
I was bullied in school. And what we're not going to do is raise a bully.
What was her take on it, though? Like, because there's always a story behind it. So what was her story as to why she did that?
Well, before she knew about the surveillance footage, it was about, now I was defending myself. I was being picked on, yada, yada. I had already seen the footage.
I still got to go with the lie, though. I got to go with the lie. So.
Yes. I was livid. I had to take a minute before I corrected because I'm like, well, we're not going to do. She ended up having to apologize to the girl and all the things. She ended up apologizing even to me because she knows better than that.
Right.
It's like, what we're not going to do is this. And so it took a lot of, and I knew she had pent up anger on certain things and really not getting along with the child. But I think what upset me the most was not only did you start the fight, you planned the fight. Y'all planned the fight together. Like, we're going to duke this out. That's how it was. Is we can't get along, so let's duke it out right here, right now. It was even a countdown. I'm like, no. Yes. They're like, 3, 2, 1.
So this was some premeditated stuff.
Yes.
And it's on footage. And that's the thing about now, like, everything's recorded. Like, you can't do nothing. It's recorded. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Everywhere you go, there's a recording.
Yeah.
So
I had to really talk it out also about the consequences and the guidance council, like, what is going to be, you know, just being involved. Like, mm-hmm. what is the consequence? And you're going to suffer your consequences. But I think it just comes to show, like you said, everything's recorded. It could be online.
It could be any minute. And that's, again, me being in social services, that's one of the things that, we're very stringent upon, not having people, videotape stuff. Mm-hmm. Hey, put your phones away when you're doing programming or things like that, because, again, they're videotaping stuff, they're putting it on the internet, and, a lot of things aren't for the internet.
No.
It's not for the internet, but, that's the day and time that we live in right now, so...
So, how do you feel about people putting their kids on social media?
I guess it's a two-way answer to that. Mm-hmm. I think some people kind of go overboard mm-hmm. with putting all their business on social media, as well as, their kids or family or whatever. But then there's some where, hey, look, I want to showcase my kids' accomplishments. If they do something great, they get the honor roll, or they graduate, or... they get an award, or mm-hmm. They're playing sports or something like that. Hey, of course you instantly want to share those things, right? But I think some people kind of go overboard and they just share too much. So
when you say too much, like, what kind of stuff have you seen that you're like, that was too much?
Well, like, if your kid is going through something, right? Mm-hmm. Or they did something, like, say your kid got caught smoking weed or something, right?
And you're showing his mom in the video.
Right.
Yeah.
So you're showing that stuff. Like, that's something private. You have a talk in between the walls of your home, and you figure that out, and you just kind of move on from it. Mm-hmm. Or, like, kids, and this is not necessarily the parents posting it, but, again, kids kind of posting stuff that's going on in the home, with their parents. And, if you guys are, it could be anything. It mm-hmm. could be anything. I don't really know a specific example, but when I talk about going overboard, it's more so when you're posting stuff that hey, look, maybe I shouldn't post this. If you're asking yourself that question, like, should I or should I not post mm-hmm. this? 9 times out of 10, you shouldn't be posting.
Right.
Especially when it got something to do with your kids or, your family, stuff like that, stuff that's private. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we just kind of go overboard for likes and clicks and things of that nature. So, for me, like I said, it's a two-part answer. Yeah. It's okay in certain instances to post your kids on social media, but there are parents out there to say, hey, look, I don't want my kids out there at all. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want the internet world to see my kids. You have, celebrities that are like that, mm-hmm. like, that hide their kids. They don't want, the paparazzi, or, they don't want their kids to be media based. So
I had to go through that in 2021. I had to come to terms with, Where do I stand with my kids being on, being displayed on social media? It was more for security reasons. And there was a period of time where I even at church, I had to tell the ministry leaders, like, don't be putting them on live stream. And then they understood why. And they got a little older, and then they wanted to, like, they asked, like, can you post this? And, like, they're very engaged with it. So we talked about, my concerns with it, and where I stand on it now. They're really only on Facebook. They're not on any of my other platforms. Right. And even then, it's always I always tell them, listen, we have the obligatory holiday picture. that's your birthday and your holidays and first day of school. So they know that that's going up there, mainly because that's where my extended family is at. That's where my grandmothers do my pictures and things like that. Right. And occasionally they'll be like, fine, I'll do a story. But I think they have, I've given them the autonomy to have a say in that. Like, do you want to be featured in this picture?
Right.
And they approve it in a way. How do you feel about that? Like a kid saying, don't be putting my face up there.
No, I mean, I have no problem with it. I mean, it's mm-hmm. your right. Hey, look, if you don't want that and you know that, you know, that's kind of what mm-hmm. what I do, or you've seen that I've posted pictures of, you know, you before. Hey, look, I don't want my picture up there. Hey, cool. Mm-hmm. I respect that, you know. And I think for me, it's not a bad thing mm-hmm. because I don't post everything that happens with my kids mm-hmm. on social media. You know, some stuff, you know, just kind of it's between
it's
us.
It's their privacy, yeah.
Yeah. So I don't really look at that as a bad thing if that's your take on it.
Mm-hmm.
And for, like you said, you got to be careful. Social media is, it's so crazy nowadays. You see, you know, kids being manipulated on social media, seeing kids being bullied on social media, you seeing kids kidnapped just due to certain stuff
wild,
that's happening
craziness.
Through social media.
Yeah.
Yeah, so like it's I think you have to be concerned about it, right? And you know, whichever way that you choose, mm-hmm. I mean, that's just on you.
So more conversations.
Absolutely. But I think we talked about, you know, a great deal tonight here. Mm-hmm. Definitely great show again. Hey, this is Parenting Next Gen, where we look to become better parents,
mm-hmm.
right? And talk about everything around parenting. So hopefully some of this stuff really kind of set in for you and it made sense to you. And it's something that you can take from here and start to implement in your parenting and become a better parent. Noed, always great sharing
Likewise.
Sharing the stage with you, you know, round of applause. Hey, on another great show. Again, hopefully you guys are tuning in with us each and every week. We drop a new episode mm-hmm. or a new show, just so you know exactly what we're thinking,
right?
And what we're going through and what we're experiencing as parents ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So again, hopefully you'll join us for the next one. Until then, hey, we'll see you guys around.
See you next time. Bye.
Peace.